Okay, I'll admit out of 126
25.
of these calls, yeah, we've missed two or three, I think. We had one technical
failure.
Not
many.
Not many, but I wasn't even thinking. I was just so impressed by everyone that's on the call. We've got some really great grantees as mentors and people who are just getting started. So that's what it's about. So, Glow, why don't you continue? And Joe wanted to remind us of the annual workshop. That's not the annual grantee workshop. It's actually the big Brownfields workshop that they get about 3,000 or 4,000 people at in Chicago, right?
Right, and he just wanted me to remind grantees and others to register for the conference. Mike and I and Bruce Diamond will be there at an exhibit. And Mike, have you heard anything about the session that you had requested?
We usually have a session. It's a workshop session, and the reason we have is that we like to get all the grantees and people who are not grantees and interested in job training to just come to that and exchange ideas. And then we also have our booth, which we encourage everyone to bring their own literature, and we'll put it out at that conference.
Yeah, so anyway, get registered for that. Hope to see you all there. Joe also wanted me to remind the grantees to continue to report in acres. Those numbers are very, very important to keep this program running. So report your numbers and do it continuously. He also wanted me to pass on the fact that EPA is in the process of collecting stories to identify cases where graduates have been placed in non-brownfields-related occupations like Superfund site cleanup, wastewater, underground storage tank removal and cleanups, chemical safety, and that type of thing. If you have placed graduates in those types of occupations, if you could please email Joe, and his email address is bruss@epa.gov. They use those to develop, they're using them to develop a publication to show the other EPA departments how critical it is that they share in the funding of the Brownfields programs, the Brownfields job training programs. So it's very important if you have any of these types of stories, please share them with Joe. And if you would rather share them with Mike and I, that's fine. We can certainly pass them on to Joe. And then the last thing is that he wanted me to tell everybody that the grant announcement for 2015 is anticipated to take place in May. Doesn't give me an exact date, but that's all he said. And then a couple things from HMTRI that I'm sure Mike is going to talk about is that we have scheduled a date for the new annual grantee update webinar, which is going to be held on March 23rd from 1 to 2 o'clock p.m. Central Daylight Time. We are working on the agenda now. And we also have the annual grantee meeting date confirmed. That's going to be held August 19th and 20th in Alexandria, Virginia. Mike?
Okay, we'll be sending you more announcements and about that. The webinar that we're going to have is different than these informal PLCs. It's we suggested to EPA that our annual grantee meeting, which we have every year around August or September, many of the people felt it would be good to get together and touch base about halfway through the year. So we did have our annual meeting last year kind of late in October. 6 months from there, it puts us sometime in late March, early April. So we decided this is the first time we've ever done this, just have a mini grantee meeting, and that'll be on the 23rd. You'll be hearing more about that for those of you who are grantees and PLC members. Both PLC and grantee members are invited to the annual grantee meeting that Glow announced in August, and we'll be putting these in the session notes. I'll be putting some other things in the post-session notes that about other meetings that are occurring. I did want to address something real quick before we get to Jonathan. There was on the listserv this week, Ray Sullivan, had an interesting question, and this question had to do with, well, we only have one Superfund in our community, and is there a way we could get on some sort of a list so we could find out what employers we can approach? And there's been several responses. We have someone on the line who I was really impressed with last week. I'm going to have Lorena talk a little bit about what they're doing in Detroit really quickly, because some of you may not have been on that call. But some of the EPA people responded to this listserv question from Ray Sullivan. When one of the obvious response was it would be good to get on your regional listserv. Evidently, all the regions have listservs, and those announce what's happening in that particular region. And they also suggested that you could see all of the EPA assessment and cleanup grants that are awarded by EPA, and those are on the EPA site. Another way to do this is to talk locally to some of the people in the community that are might be more aware of that. For example, there's a community involvement coordinator in every, certainly in every regional office, and they keep track of what Superfunds and who the contractors are in those communities. We'll put this in the post-session notes. One of the most effective ways, I think, is what Lorena is doing. Lorena, could you tell us briefly what your approach was to finding out who the best contractors were to approach about job training?
Well, currently the city has funding, HUD funding, to do demolitions for blight removal throughout the city of Detroit. So that's residential and commercial dwellings. Excuse me. And so what we have is through our Detroit Building Authority and through our Detroit Land Bank, they're managing the funds, and so they already have a relationship with a lot of consultants. So once they've already gone through our city's procurement process, they have a bi-weekly meeting with all of the contractors, just giving them updates of things that's going on and what's happening in the project. So I actually attended one of those meetings, and there were over, I want to say, 20 different contracting firms there. And I explained what our project was and how we could train, you know, potential employees for them. And then they were very interested in that. So that was just kind of how we got our foot in the door in that way. And in addition, we also partnering with Detroit Employment Solutions Corporation, who works with several different employers as well as universities and community colleges for trainings and placement. They mainly do job training and placement through state funding. And so by working with them, that also opened other doors as well.
So clearly, if you could get into someone in City Hall that's involved in procurement, as I understand what you're saying, that can give you a ticket into contractors' names and contact information. Is that what, would you say that would be correct for advice for other people?
That would be correct for those that are already in city government. I'm not sure how easy it is to get that information if it's a outside agency or community group.
Might be tougher. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I know, excuse me, for liability purposes, the city has a hard time actually recommending contractors to individuals outside of the city, because if you go hire those individuals and they don't do a good job, then you can come back and say, hey, the city told me that this was the person I should hire, and it didn't work out for me. So, but as a list, I mean, it is all public information, so I'm sure it's a way that you can get it. I'm just not sure how easy it is from being on the outside. However, if you develop a relationship with them in the beginning, like, hey, we got this grant, or we're applying for this grant, and then we want to do training and help build relationships and so on and so forth, that could benefit the city in the end because it's working for the residents, and you may be able to kind of get in that way, especially like through the mayor's office.
That's the trick. And now you were fortunate, and you hit a nerve, and you were able to get into that procurement meeting, and then we're able to contact the people. Now, everyone may or may not be able to do that. It's tougher probably the further away you are from City Hall. It gets a little tougher in terms of trust and having them say, oh, I don't mind if you come, it's a public meeting, and then hang around and try to get contractors' names. After that, things start to work well, and as a result, Lorena had to triple her training because of the demands of the employers of wanting some of their graduates. Now, that was a very specific, basically HUD, lead and asbestos type of demolition. It wouldn't necessarily apply to wastewater or some of the other things, but it's certainly a novel and interesting approach. And I'll have to say, employment is one of the toughest things we grapple with, and we'll be talking about that more in later PLCs, because it is very difficult. And the newer you are, and this was a problem Detroit had, and we'll talk to Jonathan about Mott. Everyone has problems, and the younger you are in terms of a grant, the tougher it is, because people don't know who you are. You don't have alumni out there talking up your program. You don't have employers out there talking up your program, and they don't know. You're kind of a pig in the poke. You don't know. They don't know how well your students are vetted, how well they're trained. So it's very, very tough, and I don't think there's a grantee that we've ever had that hasn't struggled with this in the early stages of their program. As they mature, it becomes much easier. So we're going to talk about this later, though, and we'll be talking about it in post-session notes. I want to turn the program over to Jonathan. Mott Community College is right down the street from Detroit. And I would say if there's two cities in this country that have this issue with employment and dislocation of workers and the need for training, it's Flint and Detroit. Those are two tough cities. And Jonathan, could you tell us about your program and what's working and where your struggles are?
Yes. Again, hello, everyone. Jonathan Jarrett, Mott Community College here in Flint, Michigan. And I guess I'm going to sort of speak from the email that was sent that had about five or six different points to it, you know, one about your program, two how that first year went, three changes made from the original plan, four the positives and problems encountered, five lessons learned, and then the future plans. And I guess as it relates to the program, about the program, I'll go right into how the first year went. Our grant was really developed first outside of myself. I am one of the administrators here who oversees training, but as it related to the application process for this particular grant, I was not part of that process. So I was not sort of privy to the curriculum development, the concepts around the curriculum, how they came to package the program as it was packaged. The gentleman who had worked through that program or that process left shortly before recruitment and all began for our first year worth of training. So that first year was sort of a struggle for me. I didn't have contacts with the program partners really to speak of. The content that we were delivering was absolutely new to me. Me not being an environmental specialist, you know, you give me this list of subjects that we're supposed to speak to, and it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced in a training program. So the recruitment itself was sort of rocky that first year. We did our recruitment. We're out. We have people that come in. They ask questions about the training and what are we going to be doing and what does it really look like for jobs. And there was still, for me, somewhat of a deer in the headlights around the curriculum and really what it would mean for these participants to go through the program and what job outlooks really could look like. We had been in contact with one of the program partners, the Genesee County Land Bank, who actually is overseeing the brownfield cleanup at the Chevy, as it was renamed, Chevy Commons, which was a site that General Motors had one of their plants at, and it spans some 100 or so acres of land that needs remediation. One of the things we ran into during the timing of this is that whereas the city had received federal dollars even for the cleanup of the site, none of the work had started. They were still in development of really finalizing the project plan and the scope of work. So again, a lot of things that were sort of in the air that created some struggles for us that with that first cohort in winter of 2014. So, you know, we go through the process, we go through the curriculum, we go through, and we get to a point where, okay, now we've gone through the first year, rocky. We're looking at year two, which is where we are now. I had attended the all grantee meeting in 2013, but again, that was sort of a, okay, and we're assigning you this grant, come on, let's go. When I went in 14, I went and we actually had the opportunity to bring some of our other staff, our case manager, our client service manager, one of our job development specialists, and then one of our facilitator trainers. And that session was really helpful for all of us. We came back from that session with a lot of ideas, thoughts, and really just a different energy about this grant and what we could do with it. You know, again, and even with the brownfield cleanup at the Chevy Commons, they just awarded the contract to the general contractor within the last month. So again, as relates to outcomes in brownfield cleanup specifically, we realized, you know what? This money came from EPA. So we maybe need to look at it a little bit differently and open our scope beyond just brownfield and really look at the fact that within this program, we have all this training around material handling and just really environmental concerns. So we broaden our scope for recruitment for this second cohort, and we really started looking at, and I think as the young lady was saying in Detroit, really looking at some of the deconstruction, demolition that's going on. So we started talking to the land bank even a little bit differently about some of that other work, and that is where we found the bulk of our participants for the cohort that's ongoing is for some of those that are in or around construction itself and how these credentials and the training can help them in placement and retention within that field as broadly and not solely on brownfield as we are beginning to reach out and have communication with the contractor around the Chevy Commons site. But some of the things that came also out of the all grantee meeting affected us and really caused us to rethink our screening efforts I want to say Molly out of Chicago shared with us in their recruitment session, shared with us the process that they go through where it's almost like tryouts. I think that's what they call it, tryouts, where they have different industry partners and employers and all come out, and they have the participants basically try out for a seat in class. So we did something similar, and we modified some curriculum that we'd had before, and we implemented what we call our fast track, which is we have it designed as a two-week training, a prerequisite or a pre-training course for all participants, where we really begin to take a look at employability skills, a lot of soft skills type things. Are you ready for training, overcoming various obstacles? We even start looking at, okay, even before training, what type of, you know, resume do you have? Let's start thinking about the end and the outcomes at the beginning. So we went through that process, and what it allowed us to do is sort of, one, it for those that really are not as determined and focused as we need them to be, they wind up self-eliminating. You know, when you have to come for 2 weeks before class even starts for 3 hours a day, you know, that can be a commitment for some. But it, again, before any other grant dollars are expended and we pay, you know, for core curriculum or anything like that, we found it to be a worthwhile practice. So again, that all committee or that all grantee meeting helped us in looking at both our recruitment from how we prospect to once we get some person's prospect, how we screen them, and that another lesson we learned is that as we were going through our curriculum in that first year, there were some areas that we had some duplication. So we were able to sort of streamline and combine some topics where there was overlap. So again, myself not really knowing what I was looking at when I saw this program design, as we're going through it and as we're working through with the instructors who have the technical proficiencies, they were able to better help me to shape what we did in this second year. So as we started looking at and then looking at positives that we saw, again, to sort of go back, this program offered more industry recognized certifications than any other that I have seen and worked with, and that is truly something that's invaluable for these participants to be able to get the HAZWOPR 40, and for the number of employers that really would like to have someone in their employ that has that credential, it is proving and will prove for these participants to be beneficial. Again, some of the other positives that we saw, we actually had some of our instructors be so impressed with some of the participants that they actually contract some of them now to help them with instruction. So that's been something that was a pleasant surprise for some of the participants to be able to do work with the instructors and go out and be able to be presenters with and alongside them. Also, one of the things that we did in modifying our core curriculum was added near the end of the program some additional time there too for employability skills. Again, updating your resume with all of your current credentials. We're looking to bring in some industry employers to help us both do whether it be mock and or actual interviews during the class, and then sharing again more about sort of their outlook on employment over, you know, the next several months. As far as future plans, one of the things that we're looking at and have been forced to look at is timing of our training. We ran it the last couple of years, or this year and last year, starting in January, ending sometime in April. And we found that, you know, we're about a month and a half behind timing-wise to really give our students a good opportunity to find employment in the field. So what we're looking to do for our third and final cohort is have the instruction be sometime this fall to conclude late fall, early winter, so that the persons will be ready come time that the employers are coming, the employers with emphasis in brownfield is coming out of the winter months and really in the throes of their employment recruitment. I know we're past 2:30 now. I heard a few beeps, or we're close to 2:30, so I'll stop there with my spiel on our program and field. If there be a question or two, make myself available for that.
Any questions? You know, there's something, Jonathan, that was really a great idea, and you just hit on it. It was the timing, because intuitively you would think, okay, starting January, be ready for the construction, particularly in April, May, when they'll be doing construction. But what we forget to talk about is the time lag between when you graduate. You're not going to pop right into a job. So you've got a 2 or 3 month lag there of trying to get employment, getting the word out. And if you add that to April, you've already passed through the construction period.
Exactly.
So I think you've nailed that. You make it so that they're really going to graduate before it's time to hire people, I mean, maybe 2 or 3 months behind before, because the employers and contractors are going to want to be set as soon as the weather starts to break. So that puts you into the fall with an early winter. What are some of the grantees thinking in that terms? I suppose it depends where you live. In terms of, you're up in Flint now, Louisiana,
yes,
would be quite different, I guess. How does some of the other people schedule their training? Anyone out there wants to volunteer their training schedule? Okay, well, we've got a quiet group. They do.
This is,
yes,
Jason with the City of Durham, and I can tell you that what we do in our training schedule, we look at two things. We do look at the timelines that our businesses and industries own, but we also are dealing with our training provider, which is Durham Technical Community College. And a lot of it is dictated by their schedule of training and how they can kind of fit it into the semester schedule that they're currently on.
So it really varies. So you're not really all that concerned about the hiring schedule. Or, the contracting schedule. You're just going to say, we're going to do our classes, and then we're going to have a period of time when people are going to get hired or not. Would you say that?
We usually do our hiring process while they're still in the training.
Oh, okay.
I know that sounds odd, but we know the employers well enough that they know we're going to have graduates, and we don't wait until they're done. And that's how we sort of deal with that three-month lag, because there is a three-month lag. And if you wait until May, which is when the colleges are often set up, you've missed the season for anything outdoors.
Some of the employers have actually, some of the grantees have invited their employers to be guest speakers. And, of course, what they're trying to do is to get them to bond with the students. But the more time the employer could spend in the classroom, he's eyeing the students. And he says, oh, I like this guy, and I'm going to snap him up before anyone else does. And it's another little placement trick that often works. If you can get an employer to just come in and talk. And, Jason, I've been to your employer night. You've got a very impressive employer night where all the employers come in, and you might have some speakers and some students. You have students there, too. It's great. Any ideas or other questions at what they're doing over in Flint?
Yes, I have a question. I was wondering how many years has this program been going on there?
We're into our second year in here in Flint.
In a three-year grant?
In a three-year grant, yes.
So you're into the second year. Is there anybody that's had a repeat of the grant, or are you going to be reapplying in 3 years to keep this continuing?
I have not been given the determination as to how and what we're going to do by way of additional application. I'm not certain.
Okay, because we had just applied for the grant, and we have not heard back whether we were accepted or not to receive the grant, but I was just curious if it, even though it's a three-year grant, we're going to be having ongoing mitigation at a Superfund site, and we'd probably need to keep it going for years. It's one of the largest in the country.
Well, let me speak quickly to that. The program's been going on for over a decade.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yes, yes.
No, it's not just a one-time grant.
Not at all. An annual re-up. In fact, we encourage people who don't get accepted. Now, the fact that you haven't gotten notice is a good thing because the first cut has already occurred. So now we're into the ranking criteria review, and as Glo said, will be awarded in May. Every year, and EPA always emphasizes, if you don't get it on the first time, reapply. This has been every year since, about 1990. Now, the fact is also, there used to be 10 or 12 grantees. That's up to about 17. The budget has increased very slowly. They keep it small, but it's up to about $3.5 million at $200,000. So you're talking about 17 grants, about half, and it varies, and there's no set rule. But over the last most recent years, it appears to me when we look at the accepted, about half are new and half are re-ups. We call them re-ups. People have had them before. We've got grantees. When we stand up at the annual grantee meeting, there are grantees that we have them raise their hands or recognize. We have some that have been over 10 years, have been running these programs, and they've been re-upped. Now, after every three-year cycle, you're going to have to re-up, so you're going to have to recompete. And so it's not so much like NSF might be, where once you get it, you can go on forever. And
right.
Being there once, it doesn't give you an advantage. This is all they re-up. Now, another thing I'd also like to add is we have groups like New Jersey Youth Corps who started out and had several re-ups, and then they didn't need the money anymore. So they went out, and then they came back. And even now, people in New Jersey Youth Corps, they've retired, and they still come to our annual meeting. So George Pendoff, if all of those who have been to the last meeting will recognize George. He's been with this program almost since the beginning. And so definitely the program could go on forever, and definitely even when federal funds end, in fact, the spirit of the program is during those 3 years, hopefully you're going to link up to the WIB or link up to a state program that's going to keep you funded, even if you don't get EPA funds. We've had people in Brooklyn, New York, who they have been funded, lost their funding, was able to keep the program going with some other funds, and then they're refunded again this last year. So it's a combination of all those things, but our hope is that once you get your program started, you're going to get some leverage funds, and it's going to keep you going, and you're going to get more funding and maybe some state funding and some WIB money, labor money, and then on top of that, you may get re-upped and get another, you can go for another 10 years if you're fortunate enough.
Sounds good. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And anyone else? Any questions? We do try to keep these at 30 minutes. And our next one, of course, will be on March 18th. And then, as Glo mentioned, on the 23rd, we're going to have a little special webinar. It's not connected at all with the PLCs, but the webinars, the people who are invited are all the grantees, and then also any PLC members are also invited to the annual grantee and the webinar. So with that,
I'll also put that announcement out on the listserv too.
Okay. And I really want to thank you, Jonathan. You took a program and ran with it, and I'm really impressed with what you're doing. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And you and Lorena need to get together. You guys are sister programs. It's great.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take care, you guys.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.